right now, speaking of going extinct in October. Michelle Brown, our former researcher, now a producer on Drive Time, went to Our Lady's Island in Wexford, where she met some of the people who have been instrumental in saving the fuzzy little cottonweed plant with its grey foliage and yellow flower from going extinct. She began by talking to Adele Marr, who remembers first seeing the plant back in 1994 when she was head of propagation in the nurseries at the National Botanic Gardens in Dublin.
And I was really smitten from the word go when I saw it. I thought it was the most wonderful little plant. I loved, I suppose, the vulnerability of it. I loved the foliage. It's so grey in colour and really soft. And the flower is lovely too. From then on, then I was just involved in the propagation of it.
Adele takes me into the dunes to show me the last remaining plants in the wild.
The cedar is there.
Oh, it's just beautiful, isn't it?
So that's the Salty Islands.
Yeah.
There, and I said that could be Kilmore Quay. And then Rosslare Harbour would be that direction. So I think this could be plant number 1, 2, 3, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. But that's all there is, those two patches. And this was full of it years ago.
So you can count on your fingers the naturally remaining plants. But thankfully, that is not all that remains. There is brilliant sunshine on this late autumnal morning. Mike Wise Jackson and Tony Murray from the National Parks and Wildlife Service are down doing their annual inventory of the cottonweed on the site. Tony tells me a little bit more about it.
It was formerly widespread in Britain and in Ireland, covering kind of the southern half of Britain, the southern half of Ireland from Wicklow to Kerry. It disappeared from the UK in the 1930s. It was lost at most of its former Irish sites around that period and before as well, so persisting only at this site in Ireland. So it's a flora protection order species, so it's protected under Section 21 of the Wildlife Act. So you would need a licence to interfere with the plant, take cutting from the plant, seeds from the plant, possess the plant, do anything like that with the plant. So it's such a rare species. But up until 2014, the plant range contracted here on site down to around about 16 plants in 2014. So in order to try and arrest the decline, myself and my colleagues, Mike Wise Jackson and various other colleagues within the NPWS drafted a kind of a species action plan and a management plan for the site, and together with ourselves and the National Botanic Gardens to cultivate under license plants ex situ, recreate the habitat and then translocate them into the plot. Naturally, some of the translocations don't take. However, by good fortune, well over 60 plants have become well established on the plot. They continue to persist. They seed each autumn, and in tandem with additional translocations, they have created a number of established plants that are now 2, 3, and 4 years old.
Adele remembers the trouble they had initially to propagate the plant.
And I remember having limited success rooting it, I'd say mainly because the material was so poor. And then we grew it from seed, again with limited success. But in 2013 then, we became involved with Mike Wise Jackson from the National Parks and Wildlife. And he, again under licence, brought seed up to the gardens. And it was around this time of the year. And I was so excited. So we sowed it straight away, but we held back some seed to sow in the spring because we kind of knew that sowing at this time of the year mightn't be that successful. And it's very erratic. They don't all germinate together, so you get the odd little one. And basically you just see a little bit of movement in the soil first and then the tiniest little seedling coming up, the two seed leaves open. And then in, it must be 2018 when we started coming down here to actually plant the plants. And that was the most exciting thing, to be able to bring plants back down, because Tony had created the corral at that time and they were looking for plants. So we planted them in and they looked a little bit vulnerable, but they actually mostly took off. And as well as that, say, Tony and Mike Wise Jackson would have had seedlings and little plants from their garden. They grew and did very well and flowered. So then there was no sort of seedlings coming up. So we were looking at the flower, and even though it's in the daisy and dandelion family, and as you know, dandelions spread their seed very easily, the cottonweed seemed to hold the seed in a tight bud and wasn't inclined to shed it. So we decided to take the seed off and just break it up and scatter it around the mother plant, if you like, and then the germination took place naturally, which was amazing.
So from the handful of wild plants, all of their efforts are paying off. Tony Murray.
But on foot of an inventory myself and Mike did this morning, we haven't tallied the final figure yet, but there's about 1,500 seedlings in the plot here. So they are still very confined. You can see the area that they cover is less than 100 metres in length, about 10 to 15 metres maximum width. So we literally have more or less got all our eggs in one basket here still. So that puts us hugely vulnerable to one-off catastrophes here, a once-off massive inundation of an autumnal hurricane or something could have a catastrophic impact on the plants while they continue. While the range is significantly greater than it was 10 years ago, it's still a very vulnerable situation.
I understand you can also find them sort of around the Mediterranean.
Yeah, the Atlantic population is a different subspecies than the main Mediterranean plant. But yeah, I mean, the plant is now gone from Britain. So the next nearest point within its natural range from here at Ladies Island would be in northwest France, south of Brittany, but then around the entire Mediterranean basin, right from Spain and Portugal, all around the north and south side of the Mediterranean, the plant it thrives there. I mean, it is generally classified as a Mediterranean plant. We are on the edge of its range here, and edge of range species are always most vulnerable at the edge of that range rather than the centre of the known range.
So what's Paul digging up there?
Paul is tackling the marum coming in, but he's also tackling the rest harrow, which is this particular plant here. It grows kind of flush to the ground, but it kind of carpets an area. What it actually does is it sends down a really big woody root system, and it turns out that the plant is called rest harrow because it used to arrest the harrow and stop the ground being ploughed. So in tandem with the marum, we have to try and keep the rest harrow in check, because otherwise it would just carpet an area. And when it carpets it, nothing else grows. You know, we have conflicting indigenous species, and obviously the rest harrow is not a protected plant. It's abundant, and the cottonweed takes the priority just in this particular small plot.
Since retiring, Adele and her husband Paul, who is a former curator at the National Botanic Gardens, continue to assist in the safeguarding of the plant in a volunteer capacity. Paul takes a break from his digging to tell me more.
Because Nolan and Adele usually go off and do the counting of the true wild plants, and I tackle rest harrow, but I dug a hole to try and get under the rest harrow that I nearly could have fitted into myself, and I'm 6 foot. It goes way down, and it's the most incredibly gorgeous looking root, because it plaits itself as it's going down into the ground, almost like corkscrew-like. To try and get that out is really a tug of war, and war it is.
Strong words, but there are stronger to come. I asked Paul about why it is important to save the cottonweed from extinction.
We are the most destructive species on this earth, and I'm serious about that. Every effort we make to save something is vitally important. I've had discussions with people. We talk to people about what we're doing here, and they say, for God's sake, things go extinct all the time. What are you fussing about? The important thing about an extinction is it's not just the plant that goes extinct. It's everything that relies on it, everything that relates to it, every possibility it holds. More and more we find we're learning that. We mentioned rest harrow, for example. I was reading Peter Wise Jackson's text, Ireland's Generous Nature, about wild plants. Rest harrow, it used to be used as a cure for urinary tract infections. You know, you don't go to a doctor anymore and the doctor gives you rest harrow, you get an antibiotic. You know, and I'm not knocking that, and I don't think that's wrong or bad, but really and truly, if we study plants, we'll have a very, very happy world with, hopefully, very happy people in it. Sorry it's about
amazing.
That.
No. Is there anything you'd like to say?
Well, shut up, Paul.
It was so heartfelt and passionate and eloquent.
Oh. Sure, that's the sort he is.
All the time.
This is a heartfelt project. I can see the pleasure they are all getting at the good numbers before them. And Adele has a lot more to say as she shows me the difference the simple measure of scattering the seed has on helping the plant hang on in there.
I suppose the original plants would have been these ones, see the big clumpy ones?
Yeah.
So over the years, they were planted, you know, in up this end here. But the really successful end is down the far end, where if you look, you can see a grey hue. Now, because the sun is so bright, you can't really see the effect. But when we walk down that end, you'll see them. There are so many seedlings now, it's going to be actually difficult to count them. But isn't it a lovely little thing, though?
Oh, my God, it's so velvety.
Isn't it? It's furry. So they're seed heads there, see?
Mm-hmm.
And see how tightly they're held.
Yeah.
Now they have a yellow flower, so it's obviously gone over. But if you open that, they're the actual seed. But not all of those would be viable. So when you're cleaning seed, there's the seed and then there's the chaff, you know, the unwanted stuff. But again, if you look at that, it's not all. Seed, some of that is hollow.
Mm.
Like I said, that's a pretty good one there, and that's a pretty good one there. So it just takes a little bit of, you know, checking out. But like if you just threw that down. And I think what helps here is the gravel. The seed has something to adhere to, whereas in the sand, up in the dune there, where the wild plants are, there's nothing to hold the seed, so the seed could blow away or just, you know. So that's the thing, that's what I think anyway, that this seed doesn't shed, you know, and probably wouldn't self-seed.
Yeah.
So all of that now, even me just doing that, is just something that might help.
So what are you doing?
I'm just scattering the seed. You know, and I think close to the mother plant is a good idea as well, you know.
It's incredible to think of the effort all these biologists are going to save a tiny patch of plants. One key contributor who wasn't there that day was Nolene Smith, assistant professor in environmental horticulture in UCD. So I went there to meet her just outside a busy lab.
So this is a School of Agriculture and Food Science.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's one of the oldest buildings. So it's one of the kind of original buildings here on site in the school.
And how long have you known Adele and Paul Maher?
I think we go back to the late 80s together, which is kind of shocking. Yeah, so Paul would have been the curator at the National Botanic Gardens, and then Adele was the nursery foreperson there for many years. So, and I think that's, how we all kind of linked up together. I worked there as a conservation botanist. So with the cottonweed, it's just one of these plants that Mike Wise Jackson, who you met, published the vascular plant guide, the red list for all the flowering plants in Ireland in 2019. It was on the critically endangered list. So when I rang Mike and he said, yes, there's very few of them left. And I was like, but Adele has been growing them in the nursery. I was like, let's go down and see the site and what we could all kind of do together about it. So then, Adele, Paul, myself and Tony, Mike met up. So Tony had done this huge excavation, put back in the gravel, put in the depth, and was looking for plants. And at the botanic gardens at the, you know, where Adele and I were working, like, you know, said, well, why not start growing the plants and bringing them down to the wild, you know, and trying to see what they survive. So there were successes and losses, and that's what the joy is now, that some of the successes are now having seeding and germinating down there on the substrate, which is magic, you know. That hasn't happened since the 80s, you know. Yeah, so this wonderful kind of, you've got this skill, you've got this skill, you know what I mean, bringing the skills together. So then, since my role here, obviously more access to labs and micropropagation and technicians and support and staff and opportunities to research more. I think the wonders of micropropagation is from such small amounts of material, you can get so many. So I always say to people, you can't take cuttings from a tiger, but you can I show you one plant that we already have over 40 babies from it. So that's just from one individual. You know, from a seed, there's 42 seed and a little head we can get. When there's 8 heads on a plant, you know, we can have over 300 little babies growing from that. So it's kind of like getting all that information. So how we can bulk up numbers. You know, one of the projects Zoe is working on is that we're trying to get the DNA out to see is number 1 different from number 10? Are the new seedlings in the plot, are they all genetically different? Because that makes a better, healthier population when everybody's a little bit different. So if number 1 is exactly the same as number 10 and the whole thing is a clone, well, then we only need 1 to protect the whole population. However, if each one is different, well, then we need to start protecting individuals. So I think these are kind of the questions to kind of answer that support the, you know, the work in the field, just to make sure that we have whatever we have here in Ireland, that we don't lose any of the variability that's within the species as well. So often people talk about biodiversity, we talk about ecosystem level, we talk about species level, but there also is this other level, which is the genetic level. So the fact that this little population, it's a plant that grows, you know, kind of across the Mediterranean, but this little population in Wexford is a tough little population, so it's probably been, you know, something different from this one versus all the other European ones. So we want to make sure we have, we look after our kind of our local population in the grand scheme of things, yeah. So we're going to go into the lab now and you'll meet Joey Henchy, who's the technical officer in the lab, who does a lot of micropropagation. And then there's Zoe Yang, who's over from Sichuan in China. And she's doing her PhD looking at this and some other rare Irish plants on how we might propagate them.
Oh. Hello. Hi. How are you?
This is Michelle.
How are you doing?
Lovely to meet you.
Nice to meet you. How are you keeping?
How are you?
Yeah. So Joey and Zoe.
It's quite confusing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
is it here?
So this is the plants then. So you can kind of see, you've probably seen it looking a lot better in the wild last week.
Yeah,
it doesn't like living indoors. It likes being down in Wexford. It doesn't like being in a lab in Dublin. Yeah. But you can see here, it's got fuzzy, the furry little leaves here. Then it's got these little button heads, which hopefully you've seen lots of those in the wild last week as well. So again, this cottony feel to it, this hairiness, and this is how it gets its name, cottonweed. And as you can see, it's not a weed, it's a very rare plant, you know. Yeah, so this is the mystery section. So we've brought in the nice liquid nitrogen. A lot of this is just even to get good quality DNA to start with, and I think it's that first step that everybody has a trouble with. Do you want to show us, because this is kind of, I actually want to, you want the longer forceps as well. This is the method Zoe has been using to extract DNA. So it's using liquid nitrogen. So liquid nitrogen is the stuff you get to freeze off warts. So what she's doing here is just wrapping it up in tin foil, and you can see the liquid nitrogen is steaming now. So this is like instant freeze. But then she's going to tip it out into liquid nitrogen and grind it while every little piece of it has been frozen and shattered apart, so that we can really bust open those cells and get the DNA out. And so this is your pestle and mortar. And then we'd pop our leaf in here now. And then what we'll end up with then is this nice fragments of leaf then that can stick into the centrifuge, stick on the right spinning, and get the DNA out. And I think we have a chip. But this is the most, this is as good as we've got on it. So I think we're getting close. We're pretty confident we'll have the DNA out soon. Yeah, aren't we, Zoe? Yeah, she's like, yes, we're 100% confident. That's what horticulture brings, is the potential to do all this work. These poor things have been left to scrape away and find existence. So at least, I think the age is now, I think, to bring all these worlds together, because, you know, horticulture, we know how to grow things. Botany, we know what's happening in the wild. So it's bringing the worlds together, I think, that into this new future place that we can do as much for our wild species as we do for maybe some of our crop species. And our wild species, we don't know which one is the rivet that's holding the system together, you know, and that's really kind of what it boils down to, yeah.
Thank you, Michelle. And that was Nolene Smith, Assistant Professor in Environmental Horticulture in UCD, finishing off Michelle Brown's report on the very rare cottonweed plant in Wexford. That's pretty much all we have time for tonight. There's no Mooney Goes Wild next week. As you know, there's an election taking place, so the late debate will be here in our time slot. We'll be back in a fortnight from now with our Mooney Goes Wild Christmas special edition about books. In the meantime, visit the website, rte.ie mooney.com/Mooney. Until next time, goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.
Mooney Goes Wild was presented and produced by Derek Mooney.
Email mooney@rte.ie.